Hezekiah is one of my favorite Bible characters for a variety of reasons. He comes from a terrible upbringing, and yet he has a tremendous faith and confidence in God. His goal is to completely restore the commandments of the law and just strip away everything that had come between the law of Moses and his age, so that he could be certain that he would do exactly what God wanted him to do. And there's two philosophies we see in the kings, just like there's two philosophies we see in the religious world today. One philosophy, and it's something that God saw over and over again with the kings, is that whatever corruptions that had been created or devised by previous generations were just tolerated. And then there were those kings who would come along and they would say, no, we're not going to tolerate anything. We're going to get rid of everything that's not exactly in the law. And we're going to do things exactly the way they were done when Moses first gave this law to us. And we're going to destroy and we're going to remove and we're going to get rid of, even if we have to blow it all up and people get upset. And that's really what happens with Hezekiah. They're just going to destroy everything and bring things back. And does God say you're too strong or too harsh, Hezekiah? No, God says there's never been a king like this before. There's never been a king like this after. This is exactly what I want to see. Now, we see the same thing today with a lot of religious people. Some people are content to simply allow whatever's been done in the past. They call it tradition because it's been done for 400 or 500 years. We give it some kind of sanction. We treat it like it's something. But what did God say about all human traditions in, say, Mark chapter 7? In vain, teaching as their doctrines,
the commands of men.
So will 500 years or 5,000 years change that? No. So what I like about Hezekiah is he puts a stamp of approval on a philosophy that I have been very excited to embrace. I became a Christian when I was about 19, and that's one of the reasons I like Hezekiah. He too had a difficult upbringing. I had a difficult upbringing. So I've kind of mirrored and patterned my life after this individual because I think that you couldn't pick somebody better, except, of course, Jesus, which is also someone I pattern myself after. All right, so as we've covered the first three pages of this, but since it's been a month, I went ahead and reprinted everything so you'd have it again because I wasn't sure how many of you would bring something that we hadn't done for a month. So at any rate, as we look over the material, the first page simply records what a difficult upbringing he had. He was born to a father who was, I think, what did we say? He was like 12 years old or something when he was conceived. His father became king later. His father was a terrible idolater. Many of Hezekiah's brothers were sacrificed to idols. His father filled Jerusalem with ungodliness and corruption. You can read about the kind of individual he was in that first box, and then you can read about the terrible events that God had to send upon Israel because of his wickedness. And you look there in that second box, start with verse 6, it says that he killed 120,000 in Judah in one day. And then they carried away captive 200,000 women, sons, and daughters, and much spoil. So it was a very difficult period of time to live in, politically, morally, economically, and he learned from that. And as soon as he began to reign, his first goal was to destroy all wickedness from Israel, from Judah. And so he takes it, what do we say, takes the bull by the horns. He just decides, we're not even going to sugarcoat this. As soon as he begins to reign, he cleans out the temple, and he puts the children of Israel under a covenant to serve God. And then he does something very impressive, and that's where we're going to start this evening. And that's on page 3, right in the middle of the page, where it says he prepares to restore the Passover. Now, what do we know about the Jewish Passover? What was it? Why was it instituted?
To celebrate the escape from Egypt.
Okay. All right. So the night that God was going to allow the children of Israel to leave Egypt, he sent the destroying angel, And the destroying angel went through every household in Egypt and did what?
Killed
all the firstborn. Why didn't he kill the Israelite firstborn? Okay. They were told to kill a lamb, to eat the lamb. They were told to take the blood and put it on the doorposts, which would be the two side posts, and the lintel, which would be the top. And whenever the angel saw that blood on that door, what would he do? Okay, he'd pass it over, right? That's where the Passover came from. Well, the children of Israel hadn't celebrated the Passover in many, many years. Matter of fact, I think it says somewhere in here that there hadn't been a Passover like this since the days of Solomon. So this was a very, and that was hundreds of years, many hundreds of years. So Hezekiah, he not only does he decide to have the Passover for Judah, but what does he send messengers to do? Okay, he sends messengers out to the 10 tribes that are broken away. Now, you remember how the 10 tribes are worshiping God right now? They've got two idolatrous calves, one in Dan and the other in
Bethel.
And they haven't served God. They haven't been interested in God for, again, for hundreds and many hundreds of years. But Hezekiah decides he's going to send out messengers and he's going to say, why don't you come back? Why don't you celebrate the Passover with us? Why don't you become a part with Judah again and serve God as the law would require? And what did most of the people do? They mocked and they scorned and they scoffed and they said, we're not interested in that. We're more than happy with the way we're worshiping God now. And so, and again, this is a problem we see a lot. You take somebody the scriptures, you show them exactly what Jesus said, and they still say, you know, we're just going to stay with what we have. And you can't understand. I don't understand the rationale of people when you show them exactly what God says to do, but that's what happens, and it's always happened. But some of the people came. And so as you look at some of these things, let's look at the very bottom of page 3. Let's see, where do we want to start? Brian, you want to read that first verse there, 2 Chronicles 30, 6 through 8, very bottom of page 3.
Then the runners went throughout all Israel and Judah with the letters from the king and his leaders and spoke according to the command of the king. Children of Israel, return to the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Then he will return to the remnant of you who have escaped from the hand of the kings of Assyria. And do not be like your fathers and your brethren who trespassed against the Lord God of their fathers, so that he gave them up to desolation, as you see.
Okay. Now, because we are back, I mean, because we're far ahead and we can look back, they didn't know this, but in the ninth year of Hezekiah, what happens to these people? Assyria comes and... Yeah, he basically destroys them all. There's just a very small remnant, maybe a few, maybe 10, 15,000 people out of the entire nation who were taken by Assyria. The rest of them were all killed. So they have about 6 years. Kind of like when you read the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews written about 63 AD and telling the Hebrews, you know, things are coming. How many years after that book was written?
7 years
later. And Judah is destroyed, Jerusalem is destroyed, people are killed. And so this is impressive, and it's something we should all take to heart. I mean, things in our country, are they stable right now? We know how many years we have left. I mean, if you get a message from God in the respect of reading the scriptures and finding out we're doing something wrong, this isn't the time to say, well, I'll wait a few years. I don't know if I ever told you this story. I had a best friend. I was baptized at 19 and I came back at 20, and we went driving, and I just pleaded with him. He said, well, I tell you what, come back to me in 10 years. Well, next year he wrapped his car around a tree and he was killed. And I've just never really been able to get over that, because I really loved him and I wanted to help him, but he was going to do it in 10 years. Well, did he get 10 years? See, that's the problem. You just never know. Well, these people don't have a lot of time. Matter of fact, Hezekiah, in that next verse, I'll just read the bolded part, that second to the verse, it says, if you return to the Lord, your brethren and your children will be treated with compassion by those who lead them captive. But, verse, the very bottom there, they laughed at them and mocked them. Nevertheless, some from Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. And I suspect that those are the people who did receive this compassion. All right, any questions so far? Okay, then, we're all now at Jerusalem, and it is the second month. Now, what's unusual about the second month and the 14th day of the month? When was the Passover normally kept?
First month.
What was the second month for?
Make us.
Yeah, if you couldn't keep it on the first month because you were away or you were unclean or there was some reason, then God gave a secondary opportunity. And so these people are taking advantage of that. Now, that first verse at the top is very important. So let's see, where are we? Cameron, did I have you read yet?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
The Second Chronicles.
Yeah, Second Chronicles 30:18-20.
Where is
very top?
Right here. Oh, you're on 4. It's on page 4.
Oh, I had it on 2.
Oh, yeah, well, you wouldn't find it on page 2. That'd be tough.
Okay. For a multitude of the people, many from Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun had not cleansed themselves, yet they ate the Passover contrary to what was written. But Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, "May the good Lord provide atonement for everyone who prepares his heart to seek God, the Lord God of his fathers, though he is not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary." And the Lord listened to Hezekiah and healed the people.
All right, so these people were not ceremonially cleansed. Why not? Why weren't they ceremonially cleansed? They didn't know, right? They didn't know. The information got to them. They decided that they were going to come. And so they're not prepared to keep the Passover. So there's two choices. You can say, sorry, you guys came, but you can't take the Passover. Or you can pray like Hezekiah did and plead with God. And in this case, God listened to them. And, you know, we see things like this in the New Testament. What did Jesus say? He who knows his master's will and does things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with what?
Many stripes.
But he who did not, who did things worthy of stripes but didn't know, will be beaten with few stripes. This isn't an example that would show that this is what should be. Matter of fact, most of the time, when people take the Passover unprepared, it's a sin. And it was a sin here. But these people were in a situation where this was the best they could do. And often, when God's in a situation like that, he will accept. When people are moving toward him, then he will be patient and compassionate with them in a way. For example, when Saul did something similar and just set aside one of God's commands, what did God do then? He took away the kingdom, right? He said, your kingdom's not going to continue. But this is a fascinating insight, and again, this is something you can't carry it too far, but it's just interesting here that Hezekiah's compassion and mercy, and God heard that. So it's just a situation here that we see that God is merciful, and God is compassionate, and God is understanding. And so that's I think, what we need to get from this. Virgil?
Yeah, I think this is, what you're talking about, would be a good example. Somebody that just obeys the gospel, it's going to take them some time in learning on what it means to be a faithful Christian. And mistakes that they're going to make along the way, they're going to make those mistakes. It doesn't take away the fact that they still need to seek forgiveness for these things. But I'm not going to take a person like that and cast them out because of their immaturity at the point.
Right. Yeah, and that's an excellent analogy, because we have to do that. I think I've made that illustration before. You bring somebody to the Lord, he's baptized into Christ. That first week, he still struggles with his language, he still struggles with his bad habits, he still struggles with his wickedness that he doesn't even know is wrong yet. Where do you start? Don't come to services for a year until we get you all fixed up and straightened out. Don't even think about taking the Lord's Supper. No, we do exactly what Hezekiah did. We ask God for mercy, we ask God for compassion, and then we get to work and we do what we can to bring them up to God's standards as quickly as possible. And so a lot of good was accomplished here, because people were not so strict and so harsh. Could they have offended these people? Could they have said, "We don't care that you came, you're not ready, so go back home"? What would that have accomplished? See, that would have been a terrible thing. So, and this is something Paul even says in Romans 14. You know, if a brother is weak, what do we do? We patiently help him to see the truth. We don't go in with a sledgehammer. We go in with something much softer. Okay, so the account ends here, and a lot of good is incurred or is accomplished. And so rather than reading everything here, let's just read that second verse, 2 Chronicles 30, 25 through 27. Carl, you want to read that for us, please?
So the children are here.
No, the next one, the whole assembly.
Kept the feast of the,
no, the second one, the whole assembly. I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear.
Oh, okay, sorry. The whole assembly of Judah rejoiced, also the priests and the Levites, all the assembly that came from Israel, the sojourners who came from the land of Israel and those who dwelt in Judah. So there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there had been nothing like this in Jerusalem. Then the priests, the Levites, arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard, and their prayer came up to the holy dwelling place, to heaven.
Okay. Can you think of a good reason why there hadn't been a Passover like this since the time of Solomon? What happened after Solomon's death?
He went to idolatry.
Okay, 10 tribes left. Did they ever come back? No. So this is the first attempt that anyone has made to try to bring the children of Israel back to the Passover, back to God's worship, and it worked. And it's sad because perhaps this could have been done earlier by another king. Although Elijah tried pretty hard, did he? How successful was he? So you got to have soft-hearted people for it to be able to accomplish anything. Okay, well, as a result of that, everybody is so excited that what Hezekiah has done in Jerusalem, which is to cleanse it of idolatry and to cleanse it of wickedness, they decide they're going to do it throughout all Judah. So that next verse, Jeff, you want to read that? 2 Chronicles 31:1.
Now when all this was finished, all Israel who were present went out to the cities of Judah and broke the sacred pillars in pieces, cut down the wooden images, and threw down the high places and the altars, from all Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh, until they had utterly destroyed them all. Then all the children of Israel returned to their own cities, every man to his possession.
Okay, so what sense do you get here? Is this more than just outward pressure? There's something inwardly going on here? Mm-hmm. So you see that there's a restoration going on, not just simply of the outward things, which is necessary, but more importantly, within the heart. Without the heart, this is just all empty things. I mean, you can build a beautiful church building, and you can put all kinds of money and time and effort in, but if your heart's not in it, how's the Lord see it?
Pain.
You're doing it for other reasons. You're not doing it for me. Virgil?
It also looks like this group was in full-blown idol worship.
Yeah.
They were in that direction.
Right. Well, and that's what his father Ahaz had taught them to do, and that's what they had learned in Israel. So, like I say, Hezekiah was just a real breath of fresh air. He was just such a... I'm sure that I mentioned last week, anybody who was righteous, when you're a righteous person living in an ungodly country under an ungodly regime, how do you feel?
Oppressed
and tormented and frustrated. And then you get somebody like Hezekiah come along. He's on your side, and now all the authority is being used to push things into the right direction. Now how do you feel? So Isaiah started preaching under Ahaz. So he started preaching in a very wicked period of time, but he got to work with Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a great, great king, and then unfortunately after he died, we get one of the worst kings. Hezekiah's father was bad, his son was worse, but Hezekiah, as I say, was a real breath of fresh air for all of God's people, and certainly God was very pleased with him, as we'll see in just a few moments. All right, so that's what's going on. Now, Hezekiah doesn't stop yet. I mean, he's done some wonderful things, but he's not ready to quit. He's not ready because God's people are not fully in submission to what they need to be doing. So we started first day that he took the throne, he sends the priests in to clean out the temple, get all the garbage out, clean it out, cleanse it, prepare it, restore it. Takes them 16 days. After those 16 days, he brings all the people in, makes a covenant with them, and then about a month later, because this was in the first month, and the month later we had this Passover, so just a few months into his reign, and he's still pushing on. So the next thing he does, and I'm not going to take the time to read this because we're gonna run out of time, but if you just notice under Hezekiah, continue the restoration, the bolded parts there, Hezekiah appointed the divisions of the priests and the Levites for burnt offerings and peace offerings, to serve, give thanks, to praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord. He also appointed a portion of his possessions for the burnt offerings, for the Sabbaths, new moons, set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Lord. So not only is Hezekiah commanding other people to do it, but what's he doing? Okay, he starts, and really, if a leader really wants to be respected, does he tell the people, you do as I say, not as I do?
No.
My dad told me that once. It never did sit too well. I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but it doesn't sit well. Brian?
Well, and he wanted a complete restoration, you know, unlike Martin Luther, for instance. With, you know, there were some things he protested against that were true, but they didn't come anywhere close to bring it back to what God wanted. Here, he wanted to restore the worship like it should be. You know, he pointed the right people, made sure everything was restored
right
fully
to God's plan. And that's a good point, because we went through a reformation, but the reformation, all it accomplished was that churches were newly established, but they basically held to many of the tenets of Catholicism. They only fixed the most egregious, the most ungodly things. But they kept so many of them. And then, of course, there was that second movement that came along about 150, 200 years later, which we call the Restoration, where people said, let's just completely destroy the foundations of Catholicism and let's go all the way back to what the Scriptures actually say. And at that point, we now have a church that looks exactly like the one Jesus established in the first century, instead of one that is burdened down by all these traditions that were created that have no, there's nothing in the Scriptures to validate them in any way. For example, worshiping Mary. Where's that in the Scriptures? That Mary is the mother of God, and that you can talk to her and she'll tell Jesus what you need to do, what he needs to do. Is that anywhere in the Scriptures? It's not there. But it was removed by many, but it's still held fast by quite a few. Okay, so Hezekiah is continuing his work. Then he commands the people, and again, I'm not going to read this one, but at the very bottom of the page there, he commands people to start bringing the tithes. Did it work? Yeah, there was so much that they started to heap it up. And Hezekiah has to come and say, what's going on here? And so we come to page 5. And at the very top, again, I'm not going to read it all, but I'll just scan it for you. It says, Hezekiah questioned the priests concerning the heaps. And Azariah, the chief priest, answered him and said, since the people began to bring offerings, we've had enough to eat and plenty left, for the Lord has blessed his people, and what is left is this great abundance. So everybody took everything they wanted, and there still was too much. So is that a good problem to have? Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful problem that God's people are so sacrificial and so giving that everybody is taken care of like they're supposed to be. All the Levites and the priests are cared for. The temple is now restored and it has its beauty. And so there's still things left over. And so I didn't put it in here, but it says that he then cleaned out the storehouses and they started gathering all of this for other purposes, which God had given to them. All right, any questions so far? Okay, so things are moving in the right direction, and it's a good thing they are, because what's happening in the outside world? We're focused right now on Jerusalem and Judah, but what's happening in the outside world?
Assyria is on the march.
All right, Assyria is just about to destroy the 10 tribes. Now, how would we feel if next week California and Washington and Oregon just drop off into the sea because there's a big earthquake, and then somebody comes in and destroys all of the East Coast, and here we are in the middle. Now, we're okay, but how are you feeling? Oh, man, what's going on here? You know, what's happening? Well, that's what Judah's facing here. Keep in mind that the 10 tribes brings just right up almost to the borderline of Jerusalem. It's not very far to from Jerusalem to Bethel there, where these idolatrous priests are performing their idolatrous worship. So they're gone. So who's left? Judah, standing alone, and nobody to protect them. And so all of this is happening. Let's read this verse. This kind of summarizes it. Where are we here? Richard, you want to read that for us? Verse 2 Kings 18, 9 through 12, right under the 10 tribes removed.
Okay. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, which was the 7th year of Hoshea, the son of Eli, king of Israel, that Shalmaneser, king of Syria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. And at the end of 3 years, they took it in the 6th year of Hezekiah, that is the 9th year of Hoshea, king of Israel. Samaria was taken. Then the king of Syria carried Israel away captive to Assyria and put them in Halah and by the harbor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes, because they did not obey the voice of the Lord, their God, but transgressed his covenant and all the and Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded, and they would neither hear nor do them.
Okay, so Israel is gone for the exact reasons that Hezekiah was afraid and brought about a restoration in Judah. So those people, you remember when Joseph was taken into captivity and sold into slavery in Egypt, and God did what for him in the eyes of Potiphar?
Gave him favor.
And then when his wife lied and accused him of committing adultery and Potiphar put him into prison, what did God do with the keeper of the prison? Gave him favor. And then when the king had those dreams, the Pharaoh had the dreams, suddenly Joseph appears, and what does Pharaoh do for Joseph? Puts him over all of Egypt. Now, who's behind all of that?
God.
Now, when Hezekiah told these people 3 years earlier, if you come and you serve God, he will give you compassion in the eyes of your captors, can God do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, see, that's why this is so critical. I mean, we have no idea what's coming. But if we're right with God, regardless of what comes, what's God going to do? He's going to protect us. He's going to take care of us. He's going to give us favor. Whatever has to happen. And so it's always better to be in a right relationship with God, whether we're in times of prosperity or whether we're in times of adversity. Although God's people, characteristically, during times of prosperity, what do God's people generally do? You just get a little lax. What did Jesus say in the parable of the sower? The cares of the world, the pleasures of life, the desires for other things. And suddenly what's happened to the word?
It's choked.
It's choked. So, okay. So that's what's happening. I mean, he's making all these reforms, but 4 years into his reign, Assyria comes and begins the battle. 6 years of his reign, they're gone. Now, 8 years later, which is where we're going to start in that next section, which is right in the middle of page 5, 8 years later, in the 14th year of his reign, Assyria comes for Judah. Okay, they come for Judah. And it's interesting. I mean, there's a little bit of a, I don't know how to put it, it's just a little bit of a question here. If you look at, right underneath it says, he rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. Now, this was in about his third year. He rebelled against the king of Assyria, didn't serve him. 11 years later, here's what happens. Let's see, where are we? Dodie, you want to read that for us, please?
2 Kings 18.
Yeah, 13.
And yeah. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. Then Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, I have done wrong. Turn away from me. Whatever you impose on me, I will pay. And the king of Syria assessed Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold.
Okay. Now, here's the question. Did he rebel against the king of Assyria? Was that wrong? Is that something God didn't want him to do? Well, clearly, if he's, it says in that verse up above that God was with him. God prospered him. God took care of him. Look at that very first line. The Lord was with him. He prospered wherever he went, and he rebelled against the king of Assyria. Well, that's happened in the past. Why does he now say, I've done wrong? Is this the act of faithlessness? He doesn't trust God anymore? Or is this the act of a humble man who is trying to save his nation? See, we see humility in Hezekiah. And we see him trying to do, and is this turning the other cheek and going the second mile? Is this what Jesus asked us all to do? When we get in a situation like this where somebody in authority compels you to do something, you just look at him and say, no, I'm a Christian. I don't have to do anything you tell me to do. Is that what the Lord wants us to do? No. And so I don't see any issue here of unfaithfulness. I think what we're seeing here is the humility, and maybe more importantly, even than humility, is if something's going to happen, I'm not going to start it. God is going to be the one who's going to have to deal with this, because he, you know, obviously he's in way over his head. He's in a situation here. I mean, the entire city of Jerusalem couldn't hold more than, what, 30 or 40, maybe 50,000 people at this particular time, maybe more. But how many soldiers does Hezekiah, or how many soldiers does Assyria have right now? 185,000 men. You think there's that many in Judah? Oh, clearly not. Clearly not. And I say 185,000. That's how many the angel killed in one night. Did he kill them all? Probably not. I mean, there may have been a lot more than that. But if you get up one morning and you look out and there's 300,000 men surrounding your city, are you going to be arrogant? You're going to say, oh, you know, you just do whatever you want. God's going to protect me. So, I don't see faithlessness here. I don't see any problem with what Hezekiah has done here. Matter of fact, later it's going to say that he didn't do anything that was inappropriate throughout his entire reign. Okay, so now we come to the fascinating section of Scripture. As I point out at the very bottom there, these events are recorded, four chapters are recorded in Isaiah. Isaiah 36, 37, 38, and 39 all discuss this event. First Kings, there's two chapters. In Chronicles, there's one chapter. There's a lot of information. Matter of fact, this event is covered probably more thoroughly than many of the events in the Scriptures, with the exception, say, of the creation, or the exception of Israel coming out of Egypt, or David's establishing the kingdom, or Solomon building the temple. But other than that, this event has a lot of information. So, like I say, you got four chapters, plus two chapters, plus one chapter. One chapter. So what is that? Four plus two plus one. There's seven chapters on this event. So this is something God wants us to understand. He wants us to see it. Each book gives information that other books don't give. It's kind of like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I mean, is everything in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John different? No, there's a lot of things in each, but they're all from a little different perspective. And that's what we see in these events. And clearly, I mean, can we read Isaiah 36, 37, 38, and 39 tonight? See, that wouldn't accomplish anything. So if you want to do that, before next class, we can go through and you can read all of that. Because I can't. I can only summarize it briefly, which is really what I do. But I see we're almost out of time, so we're not going to be able to cover it all tonight. But let's go ahead and turn to page 6. Okay, we're going to... Chronicles kind of sums this up. So, let's see. Johnny, you want to read just the first section? I don't want you to read the whole thing, but just verses 1 through 4 there.
Okay.
after these deeds of faithfulness?
After these deeds of faithfulness, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and entered Judah. He encamped against the fortified cities, thinking to win them over to himself. And when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had come and that his purpose was to make war against Jerusalem, he consulted with his leaders and commanders to stop the water from the springs which were outside the city, and they helped him.
Okay, so when he sees there's nothing I can do, I've sent him the money, I've done everything I can do, but he's coming here to destroy Jerusalem, he has the time, so he starts making preparations. So the first thing he does, evidently, there was a spring that came from Jerusalem and came out into the plain and would have given these people the water that they needed to drink. And so he found a way to make sure that that wouldn't happen, so they wouldn't have any water. He doesn't want to do anything to help them. Then in the next section, it says that he built the wall, raised the towers, built another wall. Verse 6, he set military captains over the people. He made shields and weapons. So we got a little bit of time here. So we're making preparations. And then he gives them words of encouragement, which you see in verse 7. Be strong, courageous, don't be afraid, don't be dismayed. Greater is God who's with us than what they have. And at the very last thing it says, the people were strengthened. They were encouraged by this. Then Assyria shows up. And all these preparations and everything he's done, We got a couple hundred thousand men now. Now, what are all these preparations to deal with that? See, human power here. He did everything he's supposed to do. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? I mean, we serve God. Do we pray and then just sit down and wait for God to do it for us? No. Our prayers are offered with the expectation that we will do what? As much as possibly can be done. So when I ask God to do things for me, it's with the understanding that we're going to work together, but will God do anything for me if I don't show any interest? See, it's just not going to happen. Carl?
God only does. He takes over when we have exhausted our efforts.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it. We do everything within our power, and then God can help us from there. But if we just sit there and wait for God to do it, then what does God say? Yeah, I'm not gonna work with you if you're not gonna work with me. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. And what does James say? Faith without works is dead. So if I'm not doing everything I'm supposed to do, God doesn't even see faith in me. Okay, so we've got all these men. We got Jerusalem. Obviously, we're in the midst of a siege now because the city is surrounded by these men, and Hezekiah is now preparing, and I guess that's as far as we get, right? Okay, well, that's kind of what I figured, that we wouldn't finish. Matter of fact, I was hoping we wouldn't, because if we'd got through this next section, we'd all be staring at each other going, what are we going to do now? So I think we worked it out pretty well. All right, any other questions or thoughts? Okay, then, next week we'll have another paper, and we'll probably finish Hezekiah next week, and then we'll move to his wicked son and have to deal with how he undoes everything Hezekiah did, which is a sad legacy of the human race. You know, somebody builds it up and somebody else tears it down. All right, appreciate it.